zero or two to each figure. I can't pay for this. No one's asking you to. This is one we all owe you. I made some choices, consulted with Sibylline, and then sat back and waited for the food. I felt out of place, of course, but then again I was hungry, and by staying with these people I'd learn a lot more about Canopy life. Luckily I wasn't required to make small talk. Sibylline and Fischetti were talking about other people, occasionally spotting someone across the room who they pointed out discreetly. Waverley butted in now and again with an observation, but at no point was my opinion solicited except out of occasional politeness. I looked around the room, sizing up the clientele. Even the people who had reshaped their bodies and faces looked beautiful, like charismatic actors wearing animal costumes. Sometimes it was just the color of their skin that they had changed, but in others their whole physiology had been shifted towards some lean animal ideal. I saw a man with elaborate striped spines radiating from his forehead, sitting next to a woman whose enlarged eyes were periodically veiled behind iridescent lids patterned like moth's wings. There was an otherwise normal-looking man whose mouth opened to reveal a forked black tongue, which he stuck out at every opportunity, as if tasting the air. There was a slender, nearly naked woman covered in black and white stripes. She caught my eye for an instant, and I suspect she would have held her gaze had I not looked away. Instead, I looked down into the steaming depths of the chasm beneath us, my sense of vertigo slowly abating. Though it was nighttime, there was a ghostly reflected glow of the city all around us. We were a kilometer out from one wall, but the chasm was easily 15 or 20 kilometers wide, the other side appearing just as distant as it had from the landing deck. The walls were mostly sheer, except for occasional narrow natural ledges where rock had fallen away from the sides. Sometimes there were buildings set into the ledges, connected to the higher levels by elevator tubes or enclosed walkways. There was no sign of the bottom of the chasm. The walls rose from a placid white cloud layer, which hid the lower depths completely. Pipes stretched down into the mist, reaching towards the atmospheric processing machinery which I knew to be down there. The hidden machine supplied Chasm City with power, air, and water, and were robust enough to have continued functioning even after the plague had hit. I could see luminous things flying down in the depths, tiny bright triangles of color. "Gliders," Sibylline said, watching my gaze. "It's an old sport. I used to do it, but the thermals are insane near the walls. And the amount of breathing gear you have to wear." She shook her head. "The worst thing is the mist, though. You get a speed buzz from flying just above the mist level, but as soon as you drop into it, you lose all sense of direction. If you're lucky, you head upwards and you make clear air before you run into the wall. If you're not, you think down is up and you head into higher and higher pressure until you cook yourself alive. Or you get to add some interesting new coloration to the side of the chasm."
"Radar doesn't work in the mist?"
"It does. But that wouldn't make it any fun, would it?"
The food came. I ate cautiously, not wanting to make an exhibition of myself. It was good, too. Sibylline said the best food was still grown in orbit and shipped down by Behemoth. That explained the extra zeros after almost every item.
"Look," Waverley said when we were on the final course, "that's Voronoff, isn't it?"
He was pointing discreetly across the room to where a man had just stood up from one of the tables.
"Yes," Fischetti said, with a smile of self-congratulation.